Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and today's installment is a rather special milestone for the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, as this episode marks the series' 100th episode. As with all the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, today's topic is about something that maybe we're a little familiar with, but upon further investigation, there's obviously a deeper, more interesting story that might just change the way you look at something that you thought you knew a lot about. Just recently, on a nice late summer weekend afternoon, some of my more culturally adept friends hosted a performance art piece in their backyard. These friends are kind of shakers and movers in the community when it comes to the production and support of arts and culture. So when I heard that they were welcoming Patrick Scully into town for his one-man performance piece where he brings Walt Whitman to life, I felt this would be an excellent topic for the 100th episode. And Walt Whitman, whose work has shaped America as he wrote for both his current day and for the future, did not disappoint. So today we're going to weave back and forth between talking with Patrick Scully about his performance and why this performance is so important for our communities today, and select pieces from the performance that set a tone for this American poetic master and his cosmology that establishes him as one of the transcendentalists and forces us to confront the multitudes within each of us and the potential infinity of all of our beings. So we'll start with the beginning of the performance, as Patrick Scully invokes Walt Whitman with a little bit of I Sing the Body Electric.
Cheeks, temples, forehead, chin, throat, back of the neck, neck slew, strong shoulders, manly beard, scapula, hind shoulders, the ample side round of the chest. Upper arm, armpit, elbow socket, lower arm, arm sinews, arm bones, wrists and wrist joints, hand, palm, knuckles, thumb, forefinger, finger balls, finger joints, fingernails, broad breast front, curling hair of the breast, breast bone, breast side, ribs, belly, backbone, joints of the backbone, hips, hip sockets, hip strength, inward and outward round, man balls, man root, strong set of thighs well carrying the trunk above, leg fibers, knee, knee pan, upper leg, under leg, ankles, instep, football, toes, toe joints, the heel. Having calculated close, I find no sweeter flesh than sticks to my bones. Re-embodied. Yes, here in St. Cloud on the Mississippi River. Can't tell you how good it feels to be here.
My name's Patrick Scully, and I'm a performing artist. My background is in dance and in theater, and I perform mostly material that I create myself. I've done a lot of autobiographical material that deals with my life as a gay man in a world that hasn't quite been ready for the reality of my existence, and now I'm working on this show about Walt Whitman, who was also a man who loved men at a time when the world wasn't quite ready for that. And so I get to do, by working with Walt Whitman, I get to work with themes that very much reflect the themes that I've worked with in the autobiographical material about my own life. But I get to do it with somebody more famous than myself as a subject matter. And in doing that, I also get to work with a sense of history. And it's important for me, and I think for the GLBT community, but also the broader community, to understand the history of human rights and how gay liberation has evolved over centuries.
Yeah, because that's definitely something that growing up,
being exposed to different poets, writers, artists, whatever, the people's sexuality wasn't even discussed for the most part.
Right. We live in a culture that if you're not obviously heterosexual, the basic tendency is for the culture to decide that your sexuality isn't significant and shouldn't be mentioned. And so we may well learn about a lot of famous people who love people of their same sex. We just don't learn that aspect about them.
Could I have a volunteer to keep our list for us? Just someone with legible penmanship? So, start our list there with comrades. Yes, comrades, that's Greek. And Greek, put Greek into our list. Greek, like Alexander the Great, Achilles, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, Sophocles. Greek like Apollo, Hercules, even Zeus. Yes, gods and men, they all had male lovers. And not only did men love men in ancient Greece, they had language for it. And so today, I use Greek as a code word so that my inner circle understands. I tell Emerson, we have to find muscular words to make the literature of these states strong and limber, full of ease and passionate friendliness. A language applicable to men not fond of women and to women not fond of men. And we must repeal that filthy law that silences sex and the body. And you know what Emerson says to me? He laughs. Defy the Puritan Trinity? Taboo, non-existence, silence. Silence? What am I going to do with silence? I long to sing songs I've not yet heard. The strongest and sweetest yet remain to be sung. So I invent.
Yeah, and one of the things that came up in your piece is how he is writing for the future. It's almost like, you know, he's looking around at the world he lives in, and it was a very dangerous world for him.
It was a world in which there were dangers, and he was very strategic about how he dealt with those dangers. And basically, Whitman learned to write in code so that he could reach people in his own time, and people in his era did come and seek him out. People like Edward Carpenter from England or Oscar Wilde, coming also from that corner of the world, as well as Americans and others. So he was writing knowing that his writing in the future would be less challenging for people and more readily embraced, and but knowing that it was important in his own time to start to address this reality.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, even in today's world, you know, people are talking about, well, there's this big push about freedom. Well, it's freedom to be like exactly like I tell you to be. What is that, you know? And you know, but everybody, you know, that's kind of this thing I've been on lately is there's a great irony within humanity is that on one hand, everybody is different. Everybody's unique. But on the other hand, everybody is exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things in working as an artist is that I think that we only have, or we best have the possibility of reaching universal truths when we become as personal as we possibly can. Because in our own uniqueness, everyone will see themselves, everyone else will see themselves somehow reflected and everybody in a different way. But it's through that sense of how we're individual and part of a greater collective at the same time, that we share a sense of what it is that we call humanity.
I celebrate myself. And what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. Houses and rooms are full of perfumes. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it and like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The atmosphere is not a perfume. It has no taste of the distillation. It's odorless. It is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it. I will go to the bank by the wood and become undisguised and naked. I am mad for it to be in contact with me. The Puritans would outlaw nude bathing, thereby making me illegal in my own poem. Meanwhile, the police in Brooklyn pounce on parties of young men, arrest them, carry them to the station house. The frightful crime? Bathing. And the mayor of Camden has forbidden the boys to bathe in the river, something objectionable in stripping off their clothes and jumping into the water. That miserable wretch. To recompose myself, I go to the opera. Bellini, Verdi, Donizetti, Rossini. Italian saturates my life. All of my work colored by them. A real musician, a philosopher musician, could put his finger on this anywhere in my text. I heard Alboni every time she sang in New York. Semiramide, I Puritani. The Puritans. Once they've managed to outlaw nude bathing, imagine their righteousness in going after sex. I learned to hide things in plain sight.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today, we're weaving in and out between a live performance and an interview with Patrick Scully as he brought Walt Whitman to life in his one-man performance piece, Leaves of Grass Uncut, which takes a slightly more critical look at the work of Walt Whitman and how he had to hide who he was from society so that that society wouldn't cast him aside and destroy all of his work. So as we get back into the interview with Patrick, I ask him how he got so interested in Walt Whitman.
I think my initial interest came was a kind of chance occurrence where in a short period of time I had three different emails and each of them had quotes from Whitman in them and they were all different quotes and I kind of caught my eye and then I started digging a little bit deeper thinking maybe there's something here in Whitman I'm supposed to explore. And the first piece that I really kind of grabbed onto was the Litany of Body Parts that I started the show with tonight. And that led me to create a dance piece related to that. And then the farther I researched, the more I realized the richness of the material. And this must have been somewhere around 12 years ago. So this has been a project that's been a long time in the making. I've also consciously put the effort into it because I thought I want to have a piece that I could potentially perform for the rest of my life. And not that I won't create other things and go on to do other projects as well. But I think that this material is rich enough and important enough that that it'll have a longer lifespan, longer shelf life than many performing arts works do that get shown one weekend or maybe two or three or get to go to a couple places but then never get seen again. And my goal with this is to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, because it is a very important story.
It is. And Whitman is a very important writer, not just for us here in the United States, but globally. And his influence has been very wide. And so I think it's important that his complete story get a chance to be told, and not the story that would have us just know him as someone who volunteered as a nurse and took care of soldiers in the Civil War, but also as a man who loved men and did all of these things and wrote the poetry that he wrote.
Well, you're using a lot of his own words in this as well.
Right. This show, over 50, at least 50% of the words that I speak during the show came directly from Whitman.
And okay, so how long have you been doing this?
Well, this first Leaves of Grass as a show, the first version of it that I did was in July of 2014, so a little over 2 years ago. So it's been a long time in the making. And then it took me more than a year to hone that down from a show for two actors and 18 dancers down to a one-man show. And then once I had that done, then I've expanded it slightly to the version that I'll do in Minneapolis next month, where the dance is reincorporated into the show, but not with live dancers, but with video projection onto elements in the set.
Yeah, so when is that and where is that?
That'll be at what's called the Hook and Ladder Lounge and Theater at Lake Street in Minnehaha in South Minneapolis. And that's October 13, 14, 15, 20, 21, and 22. If people want more details on that, they can just look up Patrick Scully on Facebook and they'll find me and find out information about that.
What do you think? Okay, so Walt Whitman is writing from the past into the future, and you know, we are obviously his future. What else is he saying to our future? What is he saying to our future?
Well, I can't hope to incorporate in an interview as short as this all of what Whitman had to say to the future, because Walt Whitman is really vast. He contains multitudes, to quote him. Mm-hmm. And my show about Walt Whitman is one of only maybe 1,000 or more shows that could be done about Whitman. Because he spoke not only to issues of relationships of people, but he spoke about people and our relationships to our bodies. He spoke about our relationships to what one might call God and how we understand God. And he had a much more of a sense, like Emerson and Thoreau did, a sense of the divine that was, I'm forgetting what they call that school, transcendental.
Yeah, transcendental.
He was more of a transcendentalist in that he would say, touch himself and say, of course this is God, just as, and he'd touch somebody else and say, just as you are God, and just as that blade of grass and that mouse and that tree are God. So he had a very cosmic theology. His writing is almost like some texts, perhaps even the Bible, that, you know, depends upon what you're interested in. If you go to it and read it, you're going to find something there of significance to you. To me, what's of particular significance for this show was the evolution of human society and the gradual acceptance of male-male relationships and their potential for being multifaceted, including the facet that allows for male-male sexuality, but not limited to that. And so I think that is the particular aspect of his writing that Whitman felt the future would understand better than his contemporaries did. He somehow was able to imagine a future in which men could love each other in whatever ways men wanted to, and his utopian vision was that would then make for a better world.
Yeah, it's like we're slowly getting there.
Yeah.
If you look at today's world, the different laws, the different you know, things, they're not so persecution orientated anymore. Now, you know, with, you know, marriage equality, that's a thing. It is this reality,
right,
of more openness than narrowness, because way back when, and this is also, you know, part of your piece, you're listing all the different states of the United States where homosexual males could be put to death.
Right. So, and that's something that, as I mentioned in the show, at the time that the 13 colonies formed the United States, each of them had a death penalty for sodomy. And then Thomas Jefferson came along and decided that that law needed to be reformed and updated. So he suggested to the state of Virginia that the penalty for sodomy be changed to castration. It's still kind of a horrifying thought, but the thought that these laws needed to be reformed was not going to change things overnight. And so even though we now have marriage equality in Minnesota, I think we'd be naive to think that that's going to change everything overnight. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed over 50 years ago, and we still don't have racial equality in the United States. So social evolution takes time, and I think that Whitman both knew that and knew that individuals can make a difference, and particularly artists can make a difference in creating work that will encourage the evolution of society.
I calculate what I can write and what I cannot write. And I calculate where I write it, avoiding jail in Boston or execution in Charlotte. And of course I calculate how I write it. It lies behind almost every line, but concealed, studiedly concealed. Some passages left purposefully obscure. Now, there's something in my nature that's furtive, like an old hen. You see a hen walking up and down a hedgerow, seeming apparently quite unconcerned, and presently she finds a concealed spot and furtively lays an egg. And then she comes away as though nothing has happened. That is how I feel writing Leaves of Grass. There are certain truths that it's necessary to wrap up, to envelop. Take, for example, my poem, Once I Passed Through a Populous City. I wrote it as I was recalling New Orleans. Any of you ever been to the other end of the Mississippi River? Been to New Orleans? Oh, yes, I see several heads nodding, hands raising. Yes, well. In that poem, in the original, in my notebook, it reads in part, "And now of all that city, I remember only the man who wandered with me there for love of me." But in the published poem, it reads, "I remember only a woman." How could that have happened? Any ideas?
Editor.
Ah, an editor. Any other ideas?
Self-censorship.
Putz.
Self-censorship.
Self-censorship. Any other ideas?
The man.
Pardon?
The man was afraid to be...
The man was afraid to be named. Or perhaps it was a sort of travestie, maybe even a countertenor. But these are all plausible explanations.
So each artist's responsibility and delight is to find their own voice and then express their understanding to the world using their voice. And Whitman certainly did that with his poetry and had a big impact on the world. I hope to do that in my own way, perhaps less grand and less impactful, but still not insignificant way, through the works that I create, both about my lives and other people's lives, including with this show about Walt Whitman's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's all that anybody can actually hope for, is that self-actualization.
Yeah.
And there's that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's kind of a new way of looking at that now, where it's not you're building up from nothing. You got your basic needs on the bottom and you're building up. It's more like we come from a state of being self-actualized.
Uh-huh.
And then we start losing that, as we, our kids and we're going to school and we're,
right.
We forget.
Right.
And then it's... you know, we have that forgetting, but then there's the remembering. I've always told people, you know, students who are looking for, you know, their way in life, you know, what do they want to do with their life, that kind of thing. And I tell them, it's like, well, think back to when you were like 6 or 7. What did you do when you were bored? What did you do for fun? What did you do if you were drawing something? What did you draw? Mm-hmm. And, you know, something back there, that's what you want to do.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that that's the thing that we can hope for within that utopia, mm-hmm. that we're all allowed to do that. Because I think that's maybe what, you know, that future he's writing towards is, yes, allow us to do things, whatever that is, you know, gay, straight, are you a dancer, are you a scientist, it doesn't matter, just do it.
Right.
I think that's where he's kind of going.
Well, and I think that's part of the beauty of Whitman's writing, is that sense of inclusiveness that he reached for, and that's that truly democratic sense that everything deserved consideration, nothing, whether rich or poor, was beyond being lovable and embraceable and deserving of being a part of things.
Yeah, it's that singing the body electric, and, you know, I'm sharing my atoms with you.
Right.
Yeah, we are all connected, and yeah, it's kind of groovy.
Emerson is Greek.
And so is our friend Thoreau. Yes, Henry David, civil disobedience, Thoreau. Oh, I see a couple skeptical-looking faces here. Don't take my word for it. Read his journals. Okay. Now, Henry David loved Walden Pond, and I loved Manhattan. But we shared Greek views. And he wrote this. We ought to rejoice greatly in Walt Whitman. How they must shudder when they read him. He is awfully good. Closer to home, I'm admired by Abraham Lincoln. We see each other frequently in the streets of Washington, D.C. We never speak, but he knows who I am. Back at his law office in Springfield, he used to read aloud to his colleagues from Leaves of Grass. Imagine Abraham Lincoln's voice saying, "For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you."
Yeah, the only other thing that I'd like to say is, you know, I think that it's not insignificant that I think it's Emily Dickinson and Walt Whitman who are the two American poets who have inspired the greatest number of composers to write music using their lyrics. And, you know, it just speaks to the fact that Whitman had a lot to say about a lot of different things. And I'd encourage people, it's been a while since they read Leaves of Grass, to pick it up and maybe start with the Calamus poems. They're shorter and a little bit more approachable. And I think they're some of Whitman's richest poems.
Well, thanks for talking with us today, Patrick, and good luck with your performances.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to get to talk.
And we've been hanging out with Patrick Scully today on the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota as he came through town for an outdoor performance of his one-man show, Walt Whitman, Leaves of Grass Uncut. Patrick Scully will be taking this performance to the Hook and Ladder Theater in Minneapolis Thursday through Saturday on October 13th through the 15th, as well as October 20th through the 22nd. And links to ticket information can be found under the podcast for this story at kvsc.org on the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and I'd like to thank you for listening to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota for the last 100 episodes. And this program has been made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities.